Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. A little later in the show, we'll talk about California politics, but we really have to begin this week with the big story, of course, is in Ukraine, the Russian invasion and the immeasurable suffering from the people of Ukraine. One of the best organizations in the world that's actually helping to alleviate just a little bit of that suffering is the World Central Kitchen, founded by Jose Andres back in 2010. This incredible organization's mission is to feed people who are hungry. They go into disaster zones, both natural disasters and man-made disasters, like what we're seeing now in Russia and Ukraine, and they help feed people, bringing warm food to them. Jose Andres founded it. The CEO is Nate Mook. He talked to us from Lviv, Ukraine, in the middle of a disaster zone, in the middle of an area where people are coming on trains who are evacuees, who are hungry and desperate and in need. And he is helping those people and helping others in countries all around Ukraine. So we talked to him, and it's quite something to hear from him and be inspired by him. A little later, we'll talk to Rick Caruso and Charlie Beck. But let's begin this week with Nate Mook and the great work of the World Central Kitchen. Nate Mook joins us now from Ukraine, where he just left a train station there. Nate, welcome to The Issue Is, and thank you for all that you do.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
So if you could, paint a picture for us. What's it like on the ground right now?
Yeah, you know, right here in Lviv, which is a city in the western side of Ukraine, it's fairly calm, but also very tense. It is an overwhelmed city. It's also a city that is preparing for an attack. Every day you see people getting ready for potential tanks to roll in, checkpoints being set up. All this week as we've been here, we've been delivering meals at the train station, which is one of the main focal points where Ukrainians from across the country arrive either to stay here in the West or to continue on to Poland or other countries. And so as World Central Kitchen, what we're doing here, in addition to making sure that families who are arriving have a hot, fresh meal, sometimes their first meal that they've had in 2 days, we're also preparing. So we're getting stockpiles of food in. We've got a humanitarian corridor set up between Ukraine and Poland, where we are bringing trucks in filled with food and other supplies. And we're working with our amazing local partners on the ground, restaurant partners that are cooking out of their kitchens and just getting food ready, knowing that there may be a huge need in the days and weeks ahead.
I mean, it must be such an emotional experience talking with the refugees themselves. What are they telling you? And is there any conversation maybe that really stands out?
Yeah, you know, it's really heartbreaking hearing some of these stories. In the train station, we've been serving a lot of mothers and their children, young children, and they've had to abandon their lives. They don't know what's next. Many of them don't have any money or resources to go somewhere else. They're relying on the help and assistance of so many that are getting them through this time.
You know, what your organization shows is that no matter what you look like, what country you're from, everybody needs food to live. Can you talk about the uniting power of food that you see firsthand?
Yeah, you know, our founder, Chef Jose Andres, who I was just with here in Lviv, and also in Poland along the border where many of our teams are working, you know, likes to talk about building longer tables, not higher walls, right? Food is such a powerful thing to bring people together, to break bread. And, you know, it's what we're seeing here, that this outpouring of support, being able to provide a hot meal to somebody in a really, really difficult moment. We like to say that food doesn't just nourish the body. A hot meal also nourishes the soul. And, you know, we really believe that. And the chefs that are working tirelessly every day to prepare the meals, and our teams and volunteers to deliver the meals, you know, it's just the love just pours through. And I think this really shows in the food that we prepare. You know, this is not just about getting somebody some calories, but about, you know, a message that today is difficult, but hopefully tomorrow will be a little bit better and every day thereafter.
And that there's somebody who cares as well. Your organization is led by, founded by Jose Andres, which you've mentioned. He is a well-known celebrity chef. He's become one of the most impactful humanitarians on the planet. What have you personally learned from working alongside of him?
You know, I think one of the biggest things that I've learned from Jose is that the most important thing that nothing should stop is making sure that everybody has a plate of food. You don't say no. You figure out a way. You adapt in real time. We were just at a bakery a few days ago. They were running out of flour. They said, you know, we need 10,000 kilos of flour. And Jose said, great, we'll figure it out. We don't know where, but we're going to solve this problem. Hmm. And yesterday we delivered an 18-wheeler filled with flour to this bakery that's in Ukraine, outside of Lviv, preparing fresh baked bread for the community and refugees that are going across the border. So, you know, it's just one of the many examples of, you know, just the mission and why we do what we do at World Central Kitchen.
That is wild. You know, World Central Kitchen's been around since 2010. You all have served over 60 million meals in so many different natural disaster zones and man-made disaster zones. How do you as an individual stay optimistic? How do you sort of focus on your own mental health when you've seen so much suffering?
You know, it's a great question, and it's something that we talk about with our teams a lot because they are on the front lines of these disasters. And I think, you know, we also have to make sure that our teams are taking care of themselves, because if we don't take care of ourselves, then we truly can't take care of others. At the same time, you know, it is an incredible thing and an incredible honor to be able to serve somebody a plate of food and see people banding together fills up your heart and gives you that energy to keep going at the end of the day.
And lastly, this is probably the most important question, because there's a lot of our viewers that are watching this right now and they say, we want to help. So how can we help you?
So I think one of the best ways to get involved is to follow our work. Our website at wck.org. You can go there. You can, of course, donate, and 100% of your donation will go to our work on the ground in response to this effort. If you can, volunteer. We do have some volunteers. I know it's difficult to come out, and that's tough. Also, just helping spread the word, you know, follow us on social media, World Central Kitchen, our founder, Chef Jose Andres. We're constantly sharing what we're seeing in real time. We need the world to know about what's happening here and to continue to care about it.
Again, the website is wck.org. I'm donating. I encourage all of our viewers to as well, if you're able to. Nate Mook, thank you for the inspiration. Thank you for everything that you all are doing in literally saving lives and giving hope.
Thank you so much for having me tonight.
Our thanks to Nate Mook. Our thanks to the World Central Kitchen and all the volunteers as well who are doing such important work for them. On now to our usual beat, which is politics, California politics. And one of the most interesting races in California this year is the race for L.A. mayor. Rick Caruso got into it recently, the billionaire developer behind the Grove and the Americana and Palisades Village and the Commons. He's now wants to be mayor. He used to be the head of the L.A. Police Commission. And just this week, he got a big endorsement. Charlie Beck, the former chief of police in Los Angeles, is backing him. So they reached out about a joint interview with the two of them, Caruso and Beck together. And we talked about crime. We talked about George Gascon, the L.A. County District Attorney. And we talked about, you know, this endorsement. Here's some of our conversation. Rick Caruso, Chief Beck, good to see you. Chief Beck, big announcement today. You're endorsing Rick Caruso for mayor. Why the endorsement?
The city is in a public safety crisis. And after all the hard work that so many people, so many officers, so much community has put in to make the city safer, I hate to see it going the wrong way. And I really think, I truly believe that Rick is the man that can make the difference.
You know, there's another LAPD officer in this race, Joe Buscaino, 15 years in LAPD. Very pro-cop agenda that he's running on. Why Rick over Joe Buscaino? Why not stay neutral?
The reason I picked Rick is because he is at the right time in his life to step in and do the job day one. You know, he has a lot of life experience. He has experience running very big operations. And, you know, the city of Los Angeles is just that. A very big operation with many, many facets, and he has a lot of experience doing that. I think Joe, in time, will get to that point, but I think right now, today, Rick can be your next mayor and do a fantastic job.
What does this endorsement mean to you?
Oh, it means the world to me. I have great respect for Chief Beck, and we've been friends for a long time. But more than friends, I've admired him. We've talked a lot. We used to get together quite a bit while he was chief and talked about the city. He's widely regarded in law enforcement as one of the best chiefs in the history of Los Angeles. He did an amazing job as chief, so his endorsement comes with a lot of credentials, and it means a lot to me.
Yeah, there's a lot of people right now that feel like crime doesn't have consequence. Are you one of those?
So perception is reality there, because again, it's about trust. And if people perceive that there is no consequence to them being involved in the criminal justice system, then they won't be. And if they feel the cops or the district attorney or some piece of the criminal justice system is not working, then why would they want to be involved?
Yeah. Speaking of the district attorney, since we last talked, you've come out for the recall of George Gascon. You say that you'll contribute to it. Any sense of how much that is or what that means? What does that look like?
Yeah, well, the contribution's made, so I've done that. And listen, I was really clear about that. I was hoping that George would stand up, like I said, and say, listen, I've done some things and there's some policies I put into place that, you know, haven't had the intended consequences maybe, and they haven't turned out right, and I'm going to go change them. He chose not to do that to any large degree. And so I don't think there's a choice now. At the very least, you have to give the residents of this city the right to recall him and get it on the ballot. Now, I really don't like the recall efforts, I mean, in general. But now we got people dying in the streets. Now we got people being hurt. And so something more dramatic has to happen.
You said the contribution's been made. Is it a sizable contribution?
You know, that's for others to judge, I guess. Yes, I think it's a sizable contribution.
You know, last time we talked, you said that you initially fundraised for George Gascon. Mm-hmm. Then you heard more about what he was saying, and then you ended up giving to Jackie Lacey.
Right.
There are some people that hear that and think, well, he was, you know, for Prop 47, he helped write that. He was very liberal as a mm-hmm. DA in San Francisco. Didn't he already tell you enough before that point? What do you say to that?
I say to that is that I have a 20-year history with George, and when George was a deputy chief at LAPD, he was a very different George. And how he looked at crime and how he fought crime and how he thought about it. So that was my reality of George Gascon. Now, what happened to George between LAPD and Mesa, Arizona and San Francisco, I don't know. I didn't really follow him in San Francisco, to be honest. It's not my hometown. So, you know, shame on me. Maybe I should have done a little bit more research on it. But once the campaign rolled out, I quickly pivoted. And you know, that was very early on the contribution was made. And sometimes in political contributions, you make them, you believe in that person turns out to be different than what you had hoped, and that happens. You know, you don't always get it right. And but I know I'm right now in my position, and I feel very good about it. And I'm excited to allow the people to make a choice.
And I know you've said something similar when it comes to George Gascon, right? Not the person that you knew years ago.
Well, and I go much further back with George than Rick does. You know, we go all the way back to right after the 92 riots. You know, we were watch commanders together in Watts, and right following the worst time in LA's history. And George was a very different person then. I'll tell you that right now. You know, Rick's absolutely right. And I think something that Rick said earlier resonates with me. He's not an evil person. He does these things because he believes in it. I just don't believe the same thing anymore, and I think he's gone too far. I think that what we say, all of us say, is, you know, we want everybody's rights to be respected, but we don't want victims' rights to be ignored. Mm. And you know, you have to strike that balance, you know. And when I start hearing victims feel that they're being re-victimized by our system, it breaks my heart, because, you know, as a 43-year cop in LA, you know, I've stood with victims, I've held their hands, they've cried on my shoulder, I've seen the worst things imaginable happen to their families, and I just don't want to see a system that causes more harm than good.
I'm curious how you're going to pull this off when you're actually mayor, because you've been so successful in business. You come here, your name is literally on the building, right? So when you speak, most people do what you want because you're the boss. When you're the mayor, you've got a city council that all have their own constituents that are elected independently, and they could say, no, we don't want 1,500 new officers. No, we're not going to fund that. What do you do in that scenario? How do you get things done facing the opposition and the bureaucracy, which is real?
So my whole career is built on getting people to follow me, support me, believe in me, move forward. My whole career has been about me spending a lot of time listening to hear what people have to say and then formulate the right decisions going forward. So when you take a look at reforming LAPD and hiring of the new chief back at the time, I had fellow commissioners I had to bring along with me at the same time. When you take a look at USC, when I took it over as chair, asked to step in to turn SC around, there were over 70 trustees that I had to bring along with me, and we turned that place around in a very magical way. When I built my business, I got to go into a community and get hundreds of people to support me, right? Because getting entitlements in Los Angeles and Southern California is very complicated. So I don't get to just make a decision, we're going to go build the Grove. I've got to have community support, I've got to have council support. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of it is listening and learning and then actually doing the right thing. I think the most important thing in my business and what I'm going to bring to the mayor's office, what I brought to USC, what I brought to LAPD, every day, every decision is about what is in the best interest of the residents of Los Angeles.
Our thanks to Charlie Beck and to Rick Caruso, and our thanks to you for listening. Before we go this week, a commentary from me about Ukraine and why this all means so much to me and to all of us. Thanks for listening to The Issue Is. We end this week with my commentary about Ukraine, and let's start with something a little personal. Reminder that my name is Alex with an E, and there's not a day that goes by where someone doesn't ask, where does the E come from? Well, I'm named after my great-grandmother Ethel. Here she is with my mom Crystal when my mom was very young. This is a picture of Ethel with her family when she was very young. As a kid, Ethel lived in Russia, and like so many Jewish families, they faced persecution. They fled the country on a boat with just the clothes on their backs and one feather mattress, and they landed at Ellis Island and started a whole new life in New York. I know my family's story is not unique. So many of you can relate. Human history is full of innocent victims of unjust persecution, and history is once again repeating itself. In Ukraine, the president has taught us all about the value of leadership in fighting back. This Jewish comedian who once won Dancing with the Stars in his country has transformed into a real-life action hero. He refuses to abandon the fight and is inspiring so many others to follow. This week, I spoke with Jane Savorka, who's in Ukraine. Here's what she told me. Why stay in Ukraine? Why not try to leave the country?
First of all, it's my country. Why should I stay? Why should I leave? Patiently.
We all can learn a lot from the Ukrainian people's fight for things that really matter. Their lives, freedom, democracy. Here, we spend so much time fighting on social media and on cable news about issues that really don't matter. Hopefully, all of this put things in perspective. There is a lot more as Americans that unites us than divides us. And one thing we all can hopefully get behind right now is an effort to help the millions of innocent civilians who didn't ask for this war and are now suffering.